News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today. No matter when you're listening to the show, whether you're listening live here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 on Saturday afternoon, or you're listening to the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, whenever you get your podcasts, anywhere you get your podcasts, you can listen to the show anytime. And we're noticing, actually looking at our podcast stats, that some of you are listening even a few weeks after the initial show aired. So that's very cool. Glad to see the audience growing. And if you like the show, you're listening on podcast or on the air, why not drop us an email? It's gopensacola@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. Some holiday grooming tips, anything really, just acknowledge that we exist, validate us, notice me senpai, that kind of thing. Anyway, we're going to bring you up to date, as I said, on everything going on in entertainment and pop culture. My co-host Jeremy Branch is on the line. Jeremy, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Speaking of grooming tips, if you guys don't hear from me in the near future, it has nothing to do with some files that I may or may not be appearing in. Just wanted to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving in the meantime.
Oh, wow. Is your name Bubba?
Sometimes. I don't think anyone was expecting me to come out the gate like that.
Yeah.
We have fun here.
Yeah. We are going to stay far away from that topic. It's not worth the blows we'll take if we go into that territory. Anyway, moving right along, we got a lot that we're going to talk about today, but I want to talk about, keep things a little local here to the Pensacola area, first of all, because we had a couple of interesting concert announcements in the last little bit, and some that are bigger than others, and one that, kind of hits close to home that I want to talk about maybe first, because I think it's actually the first one that'll come up on the calendar, which is January 31st. At the Handlebar, a legendary Handlebar in Pensacola, one of the pretty much the progenitors of the psychobilly subgenre, Reverend Horton Heat, amazing band, always exciting to see them coming back to the area. It's been a while, and no show of theirs should be missed, first of all. But what's making this particular show a little bit extra special is our good friend Nick Flagstar and his band, Nick Flagstar and his Dirty Mangy Dogs, opening up that show. But kind of a poignant show with them opening that show, as it will be the last show by Nick Flagstar and his Dirty Mangy Dogs.
Nick's a great guy, and obviously there's never a bad time to be able to kind of acknowledge him, but I've always really liked his music. He's performed at Pensacon many years. I'm excited to see what come next, but I've heard a bunch of Dirty Mangy Dogs songs, and I've always been a big fan. So I'm sure whatever he's got cooking up is going to be super good.
Yeah, this does not mean Nick is going away. Some of you may know that he performs pretty regularly throughout the area outside of the band, just as a solo act. Performs at a lot of bars and restaurants, especially in Crestview, Fort Walton Beach, Destin, that kind of area. Nick lives, just a little bit to the right of us over there in that area, but he's got a couple other projects that he's working on. I actually happened to run into Nick just a couple weeks ago, and asked him, because he'd made this announcement, like, well, what do you got going? And he's like, well, I'm gonna still do these gigs, but I've got two other projects that I'm starting, and that's exciting. It's gonna be sad to see the end of this project that's been going on for such a long time. I think they've done like six albums over the years. And I'm sure Nick's going to probably continue to play those songs in some format or another. But that will be your last chance to see Nick Flagstar and his Dirty Mangy Dogs on January 31st at the Handlebar. Going to be worth definitely going out to see that show, and I'm looking forward to it very much. But then we've had a couple of big announcements over at the Wharf Amphitheater in Orange Beach. So just across the state line, still well within our listening area and well within our community. I always feel weird about that. It was a thing that, was always a little bit of a challenge at the when I worked at the Pensacola News Journal, where they'd be like, well, why are we going to cover stuff in Alabama? I said, because it's 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
People's lives don't stop at the state line. They, if they're going to go to a concert, they're going to go to a concert. It was always like, could be kind of a bone of contention. Like, Because I always felt like, you know, the overall entertainment scene in our early spans, Tallahassee to New Orleans, I'd say is fair. Like, I don't think people hesitate to drive 2 to 3 hours to see a band they really want to see or a production they really want to see or go to something they really want to do. It's, you know, it's not, there's no artificial line there. I mean, it is, there is an artificial line there, but it's only an artificial line. Nothing happens to you if you step across that state line and go into Alabama other than you're in another state. So what?
Yeah. I live in the Purdue area, so it would take me more time to drive to, you know, the local AMC than it would to drive to Orange Beach. So it's like even more of a relevant thing for me. But who's coming up at the Wharf?
Well, I mean, the one that I'm excited about, the one I think a lot of people will be excited about is Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just announced this week. That show's not coming up for a while yet. It's October 3rd. So you definitely got them, although tickets are already on sale. You know, might make a good birthday present for somebody who has a birthday that week. I don't know anybody. Do you know anybody that has a birthday that week, Jeremy?
I know one guy who's a pretty big fan of the artist.
You know what? I think I know two guys that actually have birthdays that week, don't I?
Yeah, you do.
That would be both of us. We both have birthdays that week. I'm the second, and Jeremy, I believe you're the sixth. Am I remembering that right?
No. Wait. No, I'm a month off. I'm September.
Oh, you're September. I thought, why did I think you were October 6th?
Because we're a week up the other way. I'm September 28th.
Okay. So, but still that week.
Yep.
I must have another friend that has a birthday on the 6th because I had that in my head pretty strongly. Is it, that's not Kubiak, is it? Our buddy Chris Kubiak?
Yes. I think.
It may be pretty close to there. Maybe somewhere in there. I don't know. This, of course, is highly relevant for everybody to the show right now.
Especially me, you, and Chris.
I know that everybody out there is like, I got to mark my calendar. I got to make sure to get my shopping done, get the gifts in time. I've seen Weird Al live a number of times. Always a great show. He has a phenomenal band. Like, people think about Weird Al, and they think, oh, yeah, it's funny, haha. And it is, but like musically, it's a really impressive show, too. Like that band.
I've never seen Weird Al before.
That band is hugely talented. I mean, think about the stylistic shifts that have to take place in a Weird Al Yankovic show. Think about all the different styles of parodies that he's done over the years and all the different styles of original songs for that matter that he's done over the years. Like, he is not an artist that just play, oh, we're just going to go out and play, you know, solid 4/4 rock songs.
It runs the gamut from pop to polka.
Yeah, which is, you know, one of the many, many reasons I think Weird Al is overdue for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions, a week ago. Think it's there's a lot of people, artists that people get on their soapboxes about, and maybe they eventually get in, like Warren Zevon did this year. I know that was a big soapbox issue for a lot of people, and I agree with it. But I think that might be maybe one of my biggest, if not my biggest, soapbox issues with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's, you know, there's no reason he should not be acknowledged there, and his band should not be acknowledged there. But then there was another show coming up at the Wharf that I want to make sure we mention, because Jeremy, you were very excited about it. And which one was that?
So I have my foot in a lot of different genres, as do you, right? And Jack Johnson is kind of like quintessential Pensacola Beach era of my life music. Like, between Jack Johnson and Dave Matthews Band, that takes me back to a really specific time. I've never seen Jack perform before, and he's going to also be performing at the Wharf. I believe it's in October, maybe it's in August. Tickets just now went on sale, and my wife and I are definitely going to be heading to check that one out. It'll be laid back and a good time.
So you're a hippie?
A little bit, yeah. A little bit.
Okay, well, that's fine. The thing that I always go back to with Jack Johnson, weirdly, is the Curious George soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, like that he did do that.
That came out when my kid was very little, and she really loved that movie, so she played that soundtrack album a lot. So you're back. The date on that, by the way, is August 26th. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah. We got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We'll be right back. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with us. And it may have been a little bit since you've heard that little piece of music there, because it seems like it's been about 900 years since we had the most recent season of Stranger Things on Netflix. But it's time to get hyped. The new season drops on Wednesday, or at least I should say the first part of the new season drops on Wednesday, because they're actually breaking up this drop of the final season. That's right. We are coming to the end of Stranger Things in three pieces. We're going to get a group of episodes this Wednesday right before Thanksgiving. We're getting another batch. I think it's just two that we're getting like right at Christmas. And then one, I believe it's either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. The final will be coming at the end of the year. So
correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I saw, each episode is essentially movie length.
Pretty close to.
Which is pretty similar to what we saw in season five. So yes, there's been a massive gap in between seasons. But when you consider the fact that they are essentially producing, you know, six mini movies or whatever. I'm not sure how many there are this season. Of course, it's going to take some time. What's shocking to think about is that there was literally only 1 year between season one and season two back when the series dropped.
Yeah, this has been the longest break of any of the seasons, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm a little bit torn because I'm kind of glad they're taking their time and hopefully doing it right. Like I don't want them to just rush something out. And I think that we have, before we get into that, Jeremy, let's get into like what got us to where we are here.
Sure.
I mean, let's kind of like start at the beginning, because we're coming up on 10 years since the series started, or pretty close to, right?
Yeah, season one was 2016.
So we're going to be just under 10 years from start to finish. And you can make your jokes about, you know, the kids are ready for AARP and, you know, whatever. They're not. Just stop. There's going to be a time jump in this last season. It's going to be fine. Okay? Get over it. Gabrielle Carteris was 45 playing a teenager on 90210.
Though, to think the difference between, and I'm just throwing this out there, the difference between an 8-year-old and a 19-year-old versus the difference between a 25-year-old and a 35-year-old. And this kind of speaks to the Duffers' original intention to kind of make this series an anthology.
Yeah, but that being said, we're not talking about either one. We're not talking about 8 to 18, and we're not talking about 25 to 35. We're talking about
10 to 20 or something.
And the course of the series going from roughly 13 to 18, and for the actors going from roughly 13 to 23. There's not.
Right? Did they start at 13?
Give or take, yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's not that unreasonable. It's not that unusual to have actors in their younger 20s playing 16, 17, 18 years old on TV.
Not at all. Historically, it's been the norm.
Yeah, it's not unusual at all. And you can debate on whether it's a good practice or not. I mean, you know, and again, there are examples of even older than that. I was joking a little bit about Gabrielle Carteris. She was not 45, but she was like in her early 30s in the early years of 90210. Luke Perry was in his late 20s too, for that matter. You know, and they were considered believable teenagers on television. I could think there's other actors that I could cite, whatever. It's fine. But this series kind of came out of the gate and just took everybody by surprise in the beginning.
When it came to Game of Thrones, I was late to the party. If I'm not mistaken, you were late to the party. With Stranger Things, did you see season one when it came out?
I definitely saw it before season two dropped, but I don't remember how long after it dropped I saw it. I think that's fair. It definitely was a thing of I was hearing people talk about it before I got to it.
How did season one hit you?
I mean, I think it's one of the strongest first seasons of any TV series I can think of.
Incredible.
I mean, it really is. It built a world that built on things that we've seen before, but in a new and fresh way. And I think that...
I mean, from the font set that they use for the opening credits, that's very evocative of the Stephen King font that he uses on the cover of all of his books, to this very, like, John Carpenter-esque synth score that opens things up. It really puts you into this kind of science fiction 80s world, and then this cast of kids, like, the show sinks or swims depending on whether or not their performances are good, and everything from, like, their chemistry to their emotional moments. I think the character that played with Will Byers is, like, a major standout. I loved everything about this first season, and like you said, one of the strongest first seasons, and even if you ask me, self-contained stories that I've seen on Netflix at the least.
Well, and I think also the thing that we've got to remember is that it puts some people on the map for in a bigger way than some of them in a bigger way than they've ever been, and some of them just for the first time.
Sure.
I mean, certainly the Duffer brothers and Sean Levy, who is the like showrunner, I guess, for lack of a better term, have gone on to great things since then. And this was what really kind of put them into that next echelon. But in front of the camera, let's first of all recognize that this put Winona Ryder back in the spotlight in a way that she'd been out of for quite some time.
Almost in the same way Travolta was put back on the map after Pulp Fiction or something.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's fair, and I think that's a great thing. Winona has always been a great actress, whatever else she's had going on in her life. Just for her to have that career renaissance has been pretty awesome. Another actor that, like, I don't even know that you could say that it's a career renaissance, because it's an act. David Harbour is an actor that had been working regularly for a long time, but he was very much a that guy actor.
I was going to say the same thing. He was that guy.
Yeah, he was, you know, oh, it's that guy that was in that one movie. You know, he was very much, he was not an actor you knew his name, unless you were, you know, one of those people that's just focused in, like, oh yeah, I've seen that guy in like three or four different things.
Yeah.
That was David Harbour before Stranger Things. David Harbour after Stranger Things is a name. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah, and whatever else may go on in the world, I know there's some things in the world lately that maybe are tarnishing his name a little bit, whether, you know, we're not going to get into the gossipiness of all of that. But, you know, this is an actor that's gone on to, because of his role in Stranger Things, has gone on to be a leading man in Hollywood.
And in a lot of roles that I think resonate with people, when he's on screen, he has a tendency to just really, you know, carry scenes and shine.
Yeah. And I mean, I think he's an actor that had always had that ability, but was never really given that opportunity until this show. And I think this show has really, you know, put him on the map in that regards. But thinking beyond, you know, these actors that had been around for a while, the kids that were introduced to in the show, some of them have become major figures in the time since the show has launched. And I think that you really have to start with talking about the preeminent image, maybe except for maybe the Demogorgon of Stranger Things. When you think of Stranger Things, you think of Eleven. And when you think of Eleven,
absolutely,
you think of Millie Bobby Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance she brought as a young girl in season one was captivating and has made her career to the extent that she is a major actress now. You know, you cannot deny that, you know, she continues to do these movies with Netflix that every time they come out, they're a big deal. They make a big, you know, she's got this Enola Holmes franchise that she launched. She's done a bunch of other things. And, you know, she's maybe been one of the ones that's been most vocal about moving on because I think she's got a tremendous career.
Yeah. I remember when she showed up in Godzilla King of the Monsters and the Monsterverse, and that being one of her first like big theatrical breakouts of it. And yeah, she is also kind of transcends the just being an actor and has become like one of these really influential Gen Z figures.
Yeah, I mean, she's certainly a producer as well. And then, you know, I mean, I think it's fair to call her an influencer.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is a, you know, a career or not, we can debate. I think it is for some people, certainly. And I don't get the impression that she is trying to just be an influencer. Like, she wants to work. She wants to, and not just on building her own brand. She wants to be an actor, and she's doing it. And she wants to produce things that she's excited about acting in, and she's doing that.
We also got Finn Wolfhard.
That was going to be the next one I mentioned for sure.
He's not only been in other movies, he has a band that he runs. He directed this movie, was it called Hell of a Summer that came out recently?
Yes, yeah, he co-directed it with a good friend of his and co-wrote it with a good friend of his. So he's somebody that is trying to show some muscle behind the camera as well as in front of it. Yep. And, you know, we can quibble over what the results are so far, but this is a very young dude. Remember that these folks are still in their early 20s. As much as you want to make jokes about AARP, they're still very young. And the fact that they're making these impressive moves, and the other one actor that I would want to mention in that regard, and all of them have done other interesting things too. Don't get me wrong. You know, some of these actors have been very well, very active on stage, et cetera. So there's all of those opportunities. But Sadie Sink is the other one I definitely want to make sure I mention here. Came into the show in season 3 and just made an indelible impression as Max, but, you know, has gone on to co-star with Brendan Fraser in the Academy Award winning film The Whale, and is getting ready to be in the next Spider-Man film. And with much speculation on which character she may be playing in that. I saw some interesting speculation on that in the last week or so that I'm kind of excited about, because it's kind of a left field choice. And I would be really excited if they're going that way.
Is Mayday the speculation that you're hearing?
That is, I have heard that, but that's not the one I heard most recently.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, so we've established a lot here. There's a lot that's grown out of this. We're going to talk a little bit more about it when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
From the cradle bars comes a beckoning voice that sends you spinning. You have no choice.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me, and we are talking about Stranger Things as we get ready for the final season to drop, with part one of the final season dropping this coming Wednesday on Netflix. Looking very much forward to that. But we started out, Jeremy, in the last segment talking about kind of where things started, and I wanted to very quickly go through kind of seasons 1 through 4, not necessarily a full breakdown, but do you feel like this, and I know there are mixed opinions about this, do you feel like this is a series that has been consistently great, or were there some valleys in there that you would wish they had done a better job with?
Yeah, I think it's a series of highs and lows, but consistently it's been pretty solid. I think there were some notable missteps in season 2, introducing the other kids from the Hawkins Labs, which got retconned later.
Okay, yeah, I want to center on that for just a second, because
sure,
that was the first major criticism that this series got from the fan base.
Uh-huh.
Was that there was that one episode in season 2 where like if the original team was the X-Men, it was introducing the New Mutants, for lack of a better term. I didn't hate that. I was all for expanding that world, and I kind of hate that I feel like the backlash to that episode has prevented the Duffers from going back to those characters.
I don't disagree. I feel like what happened is, in hindsight, it becomes a little bit more problematic because by season four, it was retconned.
Did they actually just retcon it? Explain.
So in season four, when we go back to Creel in Hawkins' lab, it basically says that he killed all of the other telepathic kids. Like, instead of them all having different powers, they were all just kind of different iterations of him, which was one, and then 11. And it didn't explicitly even mention her by name, so maybe it wasn't quite a retcon, but they just completely paved over that part of the story.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Of course, we can also say that Vecna's not a reliable narrator.
This is a good point, and you might have a little bit of context that I'm eager to circle back to. I think season three, though, was pretty silly. Tonally, I think it was the funniest, but also kind of wanted to have the highest stakes. And I thought the idea of having a whole Russian laboratory underneath Starcourt Mall was a little bit of a crazy storyline that they did a pretty good job of handling in season four. But I really liked season three at the time. Looking back at it, not quite as much.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Because I think I think in general, season three was maybe a little better received than season two.
It was, yes.
And I think that one thing about this show is that every season has kind of tried to do different things within the same world. They've built the same world, and there is continuity between those seasons. But thematically, And with direct to the allusions to the things that have come before that are kind of the signposts for those seasons, I think that season three is kind of the, like, forget the fact that the kids dressed up as the Ghostbusters in season two. Like, uh-huh. Season three feels more like a Ghostbusters-y kind of season to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Don't get me wrong. I loved seeing 11 as like a teenage girl, and I liked that the characters were actually aging up. I love the addition of Robin and Steve and Dustin's relationship. There was a lot that I really liked about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like season one and season four are excellent, and then there's some kind of pitfalls along the way.
Okay, so that was going to be my next question, is after season one, what do you feel is the strongest overall season?
Oh, season four, I think, really brought back the tone that I liked so much about season one. We got rid of the stupid Terminator character from season three, which was a weird misstep. I loved the addition of Eddie. I thought it was scary, and even though Vecna feels a little bit like an afterthought, I thought they did a really good job of like organically integrating him into the story. And I think he makes a great villain because he's actually got like a personality and motivations, which is something that the Mind Flayer and the Demogorgon really didn't have before.
See, I don't think Vecna's an afterthought. I think that Vecna, if he wasn't always part of the plan, I think that he's something that they have planned for. And not just by the way that he is integrated into the series, but you kind of made an allusion to earlier some things that have gone on since the end of season four, one of which is the creation of a stage play, which is called Stranger Things, The First Shadow, debuted first on London's West End and then made the leap over to Broadway. And I actually got to see it on Broadway earlier this year. And this show is really the Vecna origin story.
Yeah.
You know, Vecna is kind of, or Creel, Henry Creel, is the centerpiece character of this show. But this show, it takes place in the late 50s and very early 60s and features all of the characters that we know as adults over the course of Stranger Things, when they were the age of the protagonists of Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. So you get to see Joyce and Hopper and Bob and Mike's parents and Lucas's parents and Dustin's mom, all of them as teenagers, which is a lot of fun. And it really does establish a whole lot of backstory. And I really am hoping, because I know that this play is intended to be canon. Mm-hmm. I know that the Duffer Brothers were involved with it. They came up with the story. They've been involved with this from the start. It's officially, you know, acknowledged by Netflix. And I have to imagine that some of the things that are established in this are going to come into play in season 5.
I agree. I hope is that they're able to catch up audiences, because it is going to be such a small niche that has actually seen that.
Yeah, what I really wish is that they would do some kind of streaming release of this, whether they make a film version of it or they just do one of those things where they point the camera at the stage show like we saw with Hamilton.
Sure.
And put that on available on streaming for Netflix, because I think a lot of people would enjoy it. I think you actually could just film the stage production, and that would be great, because the production values in the stage production are so good, and it is so set up like an episode of the show, or like, I guess, maybe a couple of episodes, or I think maybe it would be fair to say 2 episodes, because there's an intermission.
Sure.
So you could call that an episode break if you wanted to. But the production design that they did overall with the show, complete with, you get the opening credits with the theme song, it feels like you're inside an episode of the show.
Yeah, I wish I would have had a chance to see it.
And I to the extent that also I really love the, at the end of the show, the screen comes up and you get that "Are you still watching?" message that you get from Netflix with the, you know, continue watching or watch credits, or,
oh, know, that's
or
cool.
next episode watch credits, that thing. And then the cursor comes on and it clicks watch credits, and the cast comes out for their bows. Just super little fun thing that they added to it. But I mean, it would play really well. And I would hope that fans are going to get a chance to see that in some way, or that they're going to at least do something to contextualize that within the episodes of the final season, because I think that there's important material there, and not just for Creel. I think there's some really important material there for characters like Hopper and Joyce that really puts their overall stories into a new perspective. And, you know, I have to imagine it's going to be referenced in some way. I just hope it's going to be referenced in a way that people who haven't gotten a chance to see that, which, let's be honest, is the majority of the Stranger Things audience, are going to be able to enjoy it.
25% have seen it.
I think even that's probably a generous number.
Sure.
I mean, I don't remember exactly how long the production's been going, but if you figure 8 performances a week and they can only do 1600 people about, and that may be even generous for the number that this theater holds, versus how many people watch Stranger Things? 20 million?
Yeah, millions.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's tough. Not everybody, you know, you may be able to afford a Netflix subscription. You may not be able to afford to get to New York City and go see a night at theater.
Yeah.
You know? Cause I mean, you know, just starting out, and I will say I bought discounted tickets and I still paid like $90 for my ticket. So, you know, putting aside the expense of getting there, the expense of just actually going to the show. And in fairness, I could have chosen, there were cheaper seats that I could have chosen. I could have been up in the back balcony. I sprung for discounted tickets. I sprung for discounted orchestra tickets.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I was relatively close. But anyway, that's where we are. In our next segment, after we take this break, we're going to speculate wildly on where we're about to go. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
There's no time for us. There's no place for us. What is dreams, yeah.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch, our co-host, on the line. And we've been talking about Stranger Things. Of course, the new season of Stranger Things, part one of the new season of Stranger Things, the final season of Stranger Things, dropping on Netflix this week on Wednesday. We'll get part two at Christmas time and the final episode, either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. I don't recall which, but right there in the New Year period. So that Queen song, Who Wants to Live Forever, is used in the trailer that has dropped for season five. And as is Stranger Things penchant, a little bit of a remix version of it in the trailer. But I think, first of all, that choice of song says a lot about where we're going for two reasons. One, the obvious message of the song, Who Wants to Live Forever, and you know where that goes. And thinking about how this is a song that Freddie Mercury wrote and recorded after he knew that he was dying. Yeah, there's the heavy side of that. There's also the pop culture side of that, in that this song was written for and used in the movie Highlander, another 80s classic, which Stranger Things has always harkened back to 80s classics over the entire run of the series. That's not chosen by mistake. Like, if you know Highlander, and I'm assuming, Jeremy, do you know Highlander?
Yeah.
You've seen the first one.
Yes.
So that's all you ever need to see.
Uh-huh.
It's right there in the movie. There can be only one.
Yeah.
Because I know that there is stuff after that that has its fans. I don't really necessarily have a beef with the TV series or anything like that, but the sequel movies are uniformly atrociously bad. But the original film is an all-time banger. And if you just ignore the rest of it, it is an instant classic.
I'm seeing the potency of your initial wave of lying out your case that the Duffer Brothers have said not to get too precious about any of the characters. Yet season after season, they've introduced us to a sacrificial lamb. I think in order to pay off this thing that they've teased forever, somebody's got to go, and I think there's a couple different directions they can go with that.
I worry that more than one person's going to go.
Well, this sounds fun. Who can we? Are we going to do like a death poll?
Yeah, here's your cheery holiday special, guys. as we get into the festive season, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year, which of your beloved favorite Stranger Things characters are going to die? But that being said, I think it's going to happen, and I think it's going to be more than one. And all right, I've got four that I'm going to pick as the most likely. The most likely.
Okay.
The four that would, I think, that would in a lot of ways hurt the worst, and in a lot of ways would be the most thematically satisfying in
both
a way.
The Byers boys can't go out, first of all. But I know they're both on your list.
Okay. Well, there are characters that have been with us from the beginning that we love that I don't think would hit us hard. I don't think Lucas dying would hit us all as hard as some of the others. No disrespect to Lucas. I love Lucas. He's a great character. Uh-huh. I don't think it would be as visceral a gut punch. I think Dustin.
I just don't see why they would do it.
I think Dustin would be more visceral, but yeah. But I still think it isn't quite where we're going either. I feel like Dustin is probably safe.
Yep.
I think Mike would hurt a lot, but I think Mike is probably safe too.
Doesn't make as much sense thematically.
Yeah, I think, you know, we get into some of the other characters. I think that, you know, Jonathan is probably fine. Nancy is probably fine. A little iffier on Robin. I think it would be terrible for them to take Max away from us after basically already taking her away from us last season.
Not going to happen.
I think that would be a little rough. I think Joyce is probably okay.
Yep.
Probably. That's one I'm a little iffier on. So let's get into the nitty-gritty of it here. man, it just hurts me to even think about this, to say it. But I think the ones that, the ones I'm most scared for, the ones I most feel, and I'm going to go kind of in order of the impact that I think they would make. Number four, Steve Harrington.
Yeah.
Steve has become everybody's favorite big brother on this show. He's a character that has had one of the biggest journeys of any of the characters on the show, from being the antagonist to being a protagonist. You know, he is the Billy Zabka character made good.
Yeah.
And it's going to rip our guts out if Steve dies. And Steve was never intended to survive season one.
And he makes a lot of sense as the character because, like you said, we tracked his redemption arc. Billy met a similar fate as, and I know he didn't quite redeem himself in the same way that Steve has, but because of his protective role over Dustin and the rest of the kids, I think there's a pretty good case to make for Steve. Who else you got?
Number three, and this is the one that I think makes the most thematic sense, but I don't think it would hurt as much as the other two.
Okay.
But it would still hurt a lot. Will Byers.
Will has got a death note on, pinned right on his back. I feel like
he's been connected to Vecna from the very start.
Meaning the most or making us the most upset, but his connection to the upside down, his struggle to be able to kind of grow with the rest of the characters. He's a tragic character. You can maybe even draw parallels with the Queen choice of the song in some ways that I don't want to get into here.
I think
he could be a choice.
Didn't think about that till you said it, but I know exactly where you're going with that in your head. And yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Number two.
Uh-huh.
Hopper.
Yeah.
And I know they've done the fake out on that before, which is all the more reason I don't think he's safe. And I think that if anybody is going to sacrifice themselves to try to save 11, even more so, and I think Mike would try to save himself to sacrifice himself for 11 too, but that father-daughter relationship is just much more resonant.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
And you know, this is a character who from the start has been trying to atone for losing his own daughter. You know, which was not his fault, you know, but he carries that survivor's guilt from losing his daughter to illness when she was young.
Mm-hmm.
He has become the father figure of the entire show. He has become the adult lead more than any other character. I do not feel good about where Hopper is going to end up at the end of this.
I think it is a very poetic commentary on the way that parents do sacrifice for their kids and outlive their kids and all of that kind of stuff. I think Hopper has a pretty good chance of cashing out.
And what would hurt even more is if we lose Hopper and Hopper sacrifices himself for 11 and it's all in vain, because I don't think 11 survives.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Or at least does not survive intact.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I wonder if they would take 11 off the board. I think that it would also make a lot of sense and kind of close that whole loop of what was happening in Hawkins' lab in the first place. I think that's good. I've got a kind of alternate theory to go back to the last season, and I can't take credit for this. And I love Eddie Munson, and I know we all loved Eddie, but I feel like Jonathan would have served that storyline even better because of the fact that he was really aimless and didn't really have a story in season four.
Okay.
If they would have somehow made him that character, it would have given him a heroic death, and it would have hit even harder than another of these characters that we knew was dead from the moment he stepped onto the scene.
There's a way in which I agree with that, and there's a way in which I don't agree with that. I think that Jonathan was kind of that character in season one, and I think that he had grown to be a different character over time. Now, whether he's aimless or, you know, whatever other arguments you can make there, and, you know, could I see Jonathan sacrificing himself for his brother or for Nancy? Yes, I absolutely could. But I think that was, like, he wasn't Eddie in personality traits. Like he wasn't, you know, he wasn't kind of the funny guy that was, but he was the loner and he was the one that listened.
He was the quintessential outsider.
And he was the one that listened to the outsider music and kind of introduced his younger brother to the outsider music. And, you know, he was the outsider. He was the scapegoat. He was, you know, he very much was in a different way. Like Jonathan was the alt rock, punk rock version of that kind of character. Where Eddie was the heavy metal headbanger version of that kind of character.
Yep.
Like in modern terms, we might say Jonathan was the emo version. Although that would not have been a phrase that would have been used in the 80s.
And maybe that makes him dying in season 5 less effective at this point in his journey. I think you have a really good list. I feel like Will probably makes it out as a result of the sacrifice of 11, if I had to guess.
I will make this guarantee. We're all going to end up crying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure.
And that's all there is to it. But we'll see how we do on our predictions. We are going to revisit this later. We'll see how we do on these predictions. We're out of time for this week. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.